Believe it or not, up to you. I'm going to comment on something right here that absolutely no one is going to believe. That's fine. I'm not here to try and tell you something you'll believe. I'm here to communicate the truth, what I have lived through and what I've learned. This is a lived through bit. When the pituitary went into overdrive and acidified my system, it created that inhospitable environment, remember? Well, candidiasis can assume multiple forms. Candidiasis isn't just one thing, it shifts like strategy. It can be a quiet yeast on the skin, a creeping mold in the gut, or a thread-like invader tunneling into the tissue. In its most invasive form, it grows hypha, long filaments that act like roots, anchoring deep into organs. It changes shape, function, and even fuel source depending on the environment. Like a virus rewriting code, it adapts because it wants to survive, even if that means reprogramming you to do it. There are some weird parallels going on, more later. In my case, I felt it. Those long filaments, they left wherever they were and began wiggling in my veins. Why do I say that? Certainly that's not possible, right? Honestly, I don't know if science would say it is possible or not. What I can say is that I would feel a wiggling beneath my skin. It would usually be first noticeable in my forearm, but not always. It would move along my veins, slowly, wriggling, feeling like my skin was crawling, just along the vein in one spot. Here's the kicker. If I put my finger on it, I could feel the wriggle and it would stop progressing until I released it, at which point it continued its journey. To where, you might ask? Well, it went up my arm, under my armpit, and along my collarbone to my neck. Then it would move up my neck to just in front of my ear. From there it moved to the corner of my eye, and from there it popped away somewhere I couldn't tell. My conclusion that it was headed to my brain, to my pituitary, to eat it. I honestly thought that was the next step. Why? Because that's the final step in the process. I didn't realize I was decades from that time. I couldn't tell you what it did, but I assume it got closer to a fuel source because that's all it cares about, ATP. I'm going to do an aside here and say this part that I'm talking about right here, it happened while I was in the random mental institution. Possibly 2 days after I did the treatment to myself, 2-3 days tops. And it was very disturbing. I would feel the wriggling in my arm. I would put my finger on it. I could hold it there. It would wriggle, but stay in place. When I let go, it moved up my arm, okay? And through my armpit, up to my face. I could do the same thing there on the side of my temple. I could hold it still with my finger on it, and when I let go, it would pop into the outside corner of my eye, and then I don't know where it went. It was very disturbing. I can't explain it, other than to say that has to be some foreign body like the hypha form of candidiasis. Okay, that's the end of my aside. So it turns out this story is more complicated than I wrote down the first time. It is easy to leave out something in this complex of a story, so in order to save time, for now, I'm going to include a summary of what the adrenals are doing in each period. I would love it to be integrated into what I wrote, but first I want to get it down. And here I'll do another aside and say, so what happened here was that basically I wrote most of Redacted Science, and then I realized that I had left out the fact that the adrenals were changing during the phases. And so at that point, I went back and tried to integrate it, but I didn't want to rewrite things. So I just make these little aside sections. 1995, what the adrenal is up to now. Burning quietly. One gland starts overproducing to manage the stress, real or simulated, from the fungal threat in skin and gut. You don't know it yet, but this is the beginning of its end. The SIADH masks the bigger truth. And here I'm going to say, I think that it actually infects the adrenal and causes it to go into kind of an overdrive state. That's what I remember from the article, at least. All right, next. The glucose tests that burned. Early on, I decided I needed a new doctor. That's obvious, right? When I met my second doctor, my new doc, I told him something no patient's supposed to say. I think I'm a diabetic, but my blood sugar's normal. There are also things like, my kidneys are working backwards and my heart isn't working right. Sure, there was more, but my brain was awash in power, my pituitary and hormonal systems hyperreactive, and I'm sure I looked and sounded nuts. He was in the same system as the random mental hospital. He wouldn't know the details, but he could see the stay. He humored me, ran some tests, including a glucose tolerance test. They are simple. You just drink pure glucose, a form of sugar, and wait a few hours while they take your blood sugar level at intervals. Easy peasy. I wish. It burned. Fire. Not figurative. Pure physiological fire. It lit up my insides like I'd swallowed acid, like the sugar was hitting raw, broken pathways. They told me I could drink water, I think. They didn't say how much. There was just a water fountain. It was one of the good ones, though, with cold water and a strong arc. I have no idea how much I drank. I just had one goal, put out the fire. And it worked. But did I affect the results? This is an hours-long test where they sample your blood sugar at different intervals. Would a normal person drinking that much water skew the outcome? Maybe a little? But me, with flip gradients and fungal hitchhiker acting from somewhere deep, maybe even inside the cells, I'd probably erase the evidence, or buried it. Because here's what I think happened. The sugar hit my system and something ancient lit up. Not just me, something in me. Candida didn't wait around. It grabbed the glucose and kicked off its own metabolism. Fermentation, acidification, maybe even localized osmotic chaos. And I think it wasn't in the bloodstream directly. I think it was under, wrapped in tissue, embedded, waiting. The fire I felt was real, not a metaphor. It was the system shorting out while two metabolic agendas collided. My cells starved and scattered, the fungus fed and suddenly awake. And the water, it wasn't optional. It was an order, a command from inside my own biology. I didn't just want it. I had to drink, to buffer the fire, dilute the acid, maybe even give the fungus what it needed to finish what it started. Theoretical science. Water intake. Candida doesn't just ride alongside normal metabolism. It can compete with it. When glucose floods in, dormant fungal colonies may rapidly activate, especially in stressed, hypoxic, or inflamed tissues. This activation can pull glucose into localized microenvironments, trigger fermentation, producing acetaldehyde, ethanol, and acids, and hijack fluid balance. Water is a required solvent for these processes and may also serve to buffer byproducts and facilitate nutrient diffusion. In compromised systems, this creates a perpetual burn, not symbolic, but chemical, a real physiological reaction. Excessive water intake, while instinctively soothing, may temporarily suppress symptoms or shift gradients enough to normalize test readings, masking deeper dysfunction. What tests miss? The doctor who couldn't handle my heart, 1996. This was the spring of 1996. I know that because I was still in my first apartment, the one I only had for a year. And it was after the Randall Mental Institution, October the year before. So early 1996, I had been trying to get to someone, anyone, to listen, to take me seriously, and no one was. So I walked into a doctor's office in a nice office building in Tulsa. I told the front desk my history and explained why I needed help. They looked at me like I was unwell, politely, of course, but their answer was, "We don't treat that." That was it. They assumed I was crazy. And maybe I was a little off. This condition does that to you. But what I was describing wasn't imaginary. So I did something bold. I walked down the hallway until I found a cardiology office and basically talked my way in. Told them my heart wasn't like anyone else's, that I needed to be seen now, that this was different. And the cardiologist actually saw me. Older guy, big rugs, wood furniture, that classic Tulsa doctor energy. I later learned he was one of the best in Tulsa. He talked to me, listened, invited me back to a formal appointment, and we scheduled a stress test. Now, I want to be clear. I wasn't nervous. I wasn't hyped up. I wasn't anxious. But then they hooked me up to the leads while I was sitting there. shirtless on the table. My resting heart rate was 120. They didn't believe it. They thought I was worked up, scared, wound tight. I wasn't. That's just how my body ran then. That was my baseline. Then came the treadmill. They started me slow, just walking, and the moment I began to move, my heart rate dropped, like significantly. My body was doing the opposite of what it was supposed to do. The cardiologist was furious. He thought I was messing with the equipment. He accused me of manipulating the results, told me that's not how this works, and then, instead of investigating it, he wrote me a prescription, an SSRI. Because, of course, if it doesn't fit the model, the patient must be broken in the head. I went home. I took the pill. Just one. That's all it took. And then my brain turned inside out. I don't mean I felt weird. I mean I was manic. I felt like my head was boiling, like someone was shaking my skull with carbonation and grief and rage and too much emotion. I was locked in, eyes wide, thoughts racing, nothing making sense. I couldn't sleep, couldn't calm down, my body was jittery, like my nervous system had been set to 12 on a scale of 10. I wasn't right, not just emotionally, neurologically. That one SSRI pill nearly destroyed me for 24 hours, and that's not a metaphor. It made me wrong, raw, like a live wire on the floor sparking into my bloodstream. I tried to go back. Tried to see him, to tell him what it did. He refused, flat out, wouldn't see me again. I had become, in his mind, the thing he feared I was, unstable. But that wasn't me, that was his pill, dropped into a system already rewired by something he didn't understand. So no, he was never my doctor, but I was his patient for about 36 hours, long enough for him to make a decision that nearly broke my brain and then disappear. This wasn't a test that missed something. This was a test that saw something in a man who couldn't handle the implications.